Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Retro Odyssey. This time we have a special console episode with the Sega Mega Drive. So I'm going to pass it along to Matt, and he's going to introduce his console.
As well as Adam and myself, we've also got Stephen and Ryan here. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Everyone remembers the battle for dominance between Sega and Nintendo in the late 80s and early 90s, as they each attempted to one-up the other with aggressive marketing campaigns, which often belittled the consoles of the other in an attempt to win over customers. Whilst friendly at first, as Sega and Nintendo were pushing the Master System and Nintendo Entertainment System consoles respectively, things really heated up with the next generation of consoles, the Sega Genesis or Mega Drive in the non-US markets and the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, leading to many a playground argument over which console was the best. As a result of these campaigns, both consoles exploded in popularity and were both worldwide hits, with Nintendo slightly taking the edge in the US market and Sega doing the same in Europe. Both companies planned their next moves. Whilst Nintendo was happy to rest on its laurels as they developed a new CD-based console with Sony, which ultimately never came to fruition, Sega was so desperate to hold onto the popularity of the Mega Drive that they released two additional systems intended to attach to the original console. The first of these was the Sega CD, or Mega CD in Europe, and allowed impressive CD-based games to be played using the power of both the base console and the CD add-on. Whilst never as popular as the original system, the Sega CD sold well enough that Sega decided to release another system a few short years later called the 32X. However, with the next generation of consoles on the horizon, consumers didn't want to spend additional money for a system that would soon be replaced, and the 32X was a flop, with only a relatively small number of games ever released for it. The console was jokingly referred to as Frankenstein's monster when both the Sega CD and 32X were attached, as it created a bulky monstrosity that looked ridiculous and somewhat desperate. But all of that is in the distant future, as today's episode is all about the Sega Mega Drive. Having upgraded from the Master System and possibly swayed by the aggressive Sega does want Nintendo don't marketing campaign, my parents shelled out for Sega's incredible 16-bit powerhouse, and it ended up being my favourite console of all time, with a fantastic array of exclusive and fun games, as well as cross-platform titles that people still argue over which console has the best version of to this day. I've picked four games this month, which are games that I grew up with. They're not necessarily the best games on the console, but they're the games that I have a lot of memories of growing up. So, without further ado, we will go into the first game. The first game that I've picked this month is Streets of Rage, which is a side-scrolling beat-em-up released by Sega in 1991 for the Mega Drive, and it allows you to pick between three characters, and it kind of like follows the Double Dragon formula. You just go from left to right, beating up bad guys, and it's quite a lot of fun. Me and Adam actually played this online on the Steam version, and yeah, we got almost to the end. We got to the very last stage. We didn't complete it, but we were very close. But it was a lot of fun. What do you guys think of the game?
Well, before you go into it, you mentioned it followed the Double Dragon formula. Was Double Dragon actually the first side-scrolling beat-em-up? I'm trying to think of what was the first game to do it.
I think it was like the first one that everybody remembers.
There were earlier ones on the computers, I believe. It might have been the first major console one.
Yeah, true. But as for Streets of Rage, I think, you know, it's a classic game. I think it's kind of outdone by its older brother, Streets of Rage 2, but I think there's a lot there which does the genre justice and really kind of set the foundations for what the series was to come.
I rather enjoyed it for what I played. I didn't beat it. I mean, I have a couple qualms with it, but as far as what's good, it looked really good. I was satisfied there.
How far did you actually get?
I think I got a bit ways into the third stage, and the reason I didn't get much farther than that is, well, that second boss is just murderous.
Yeah, I think that's the one I ran into a wall with as well.
Which one is the second boss? Is that the wrestling guy?
It's the dude with like the big panther claws and
The Wolverine fella.
Yeah, he just takes so much health away when you get hit.
He does. And in multiplayer, you actually fight two of them.
Yes.
As me and Matthew found out.
And I was thinking maybe getting a second person in there would be easier.
Well, the kind of trick that I found with the bosses was basically just to save up your special and then just go to town. Because I found that between me and Matt, we had two to start with. And then every time we died, that's like another two. So we just kind of kept on spamming those till the boss was pretty much dead.
As soon as we were about to die, we made sure that we popped the special as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if the specials change from character to character, but I like that. Oh, they do? So yeah, I like that the chick, her special is the police roll up and shoot a bazooka.
Well, it's more or less the same. I mean, one of them, you know, as you say, with Blaze, it's a bazooka. And then I think with...
Axel has a minigun.
That was the Adam that had the minigun. Because I'm sure my character was using the minigun and I was playing as Adam.
Oh, right, okay. So, yeah, that one has the minigun and Axel
has... Yeah, I mean, they're all kind of variations on the same basic thing. I mean, they're effectively the same special, but with aesthetic variations. I mean, they're nothing really unique, but, you know, they're kind of nice and cool to look at.
Yeah, something that they didn't do in the second game, I believe. It was always kind of fun seeing the camera pan back and seeing the police car zoomed in and doing that, and then zooming back and seeing all the damage that they caused.
Well, what happened in Streets of Rage 2 is they replaced them with special moves. So instead of calling in the police, you've actually got special attacks that are superpowered, but, you know, do a little bit of damage to yourself as a, you know, as a way as a, I'd say, have a bit of a payoff, which, you know, is probably better as a beat-em-up mechanic. But I still find a lot of charm in those police cars, especially like on the second to last level, you go up the side of a skyscraper in an elevator, you know, as you normally find in these beam-up levels. And the higher you get, the crazier your special becomes, because it pans down the building, then left to the police car, and then it pans right, and then all the way up again. It takes quite a long time, and it's pretty cool to look at, if a little silly.
You sat there for like an hour waiting for this camera to pan.
Yeah. But it's quite clever as well, because even though you've got these overpowered specials, the final stage is actually indoors, so the police car isn't actually able to help. So when you're going through this gauntlet of enemies and bosses, you have to beat them the old-fashioned way, which is kind of punishing. But for me, I think that the biggest thing with the game is the music.
Oh, yeah.
Did everyone enjoy the music in the game?
Music is fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
It's kind of cool because it's like these electronic beats, which you kind of don't really get in fighting games. Well, sorry, not fighting games, beat-em-up games. Normally they tend to go for like a, you know, rockier kind of tune, but this goes for like a electronic music, and it really fits the atmosphere rather well. And they actually continued it through the series.
Yeah, because the aesthetic of the game is kind of like very neon and electronic, kind of 80s
gritty
looking
strings, yeah.
The music was done by Yuzo Koshiro and Motohiro Kawashima.
Okay.
And it has been released on vinyl as well, if you can track down a copy of that.
What, for the original or for the second?
For the original. I'm not sure if the sequels have received vinyl releases as well, but the first one definitely has.
I remember seeing, I think it was Danny Libertson, I think he received it, and I saw a video on it. And I would imagine that the second probably has, because, you know, the second one's quite famous for the music.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty good. I kind of like the whole aesthetic of the game anyway, to be honest. Like the music, the visuals, I think it all fits perfectly.
Really nice character designs and sprite work and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. Speaking of characters, who did you play as? I played as Adam, but you usually play as Blaze. I find that she's better, and I actually kind of misselected with Adam more than anything, but...
I always choose Blaze, and I played as Blaze through our playthrough as well.
I also started off with Blaze, and, you know, just so I could throat chop people.
I tried a little bit with each of them, but I think I did the most with Plays.
Yeah, I find that she plays the best. She's got a little bit of extra speed, and she's got some cool moves. Like kicks and stuff seem to be pretty powerful. And I think Axel's just that little bit slower, and it feels kind of more difficult with him. I mean, he's obviously the iconic character from the series, but I think she's probably the best one in, like, all three of the games.
I will say one thing I did not like about the game was the way that the enemies moved around.
I think I know what you're going to say here, and I will probably agree.
Some of them are super direct, and they'll go after you, and you can fight them, you know, toe-to-toe like you're supposed to, but then some of them will just sort of do kind of like a loop around the stage. It's kind of because you're trying to catch up to them and intercept them, but if you miss, then you have to kind of wait for them to loop back around.
Yeah, I found that a lot of them kind of back off, and when they back off, they go off screen, and you can't hit them off screen, so you just kind of have to move back to the other side of the screen so that they'll actually follow you and come back on again. Because if you stay to the side, they just won't come back on.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I remember, I think that's a problem with all of the Streets of Rage games. I mean, obviously, the game's kind of improved in quality with each one, so they were all strong titles. But I think in terms of enemy movement, that was quite a common issue. I think they improved it a little, but still, them going off-screen is still an issue.
It was almost like the exact opposite of its contemporary Final Fight, where in Final Fight, some of the enemies just, they're all aggro, and you get overwhelmed. So
yeah, I get that.
There's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere.
One thing we notice as well is that when they go off-screen, if you then trigger your special ability, it won't hit enemies that are currently off the screen.
Yeah, I don't think it does. But all in all, I think it's quite an enjoyable experience. The good thing about the game is it's dirt cheap. Personally, I've got it on the Mega Games 2 collection, which has like three amazing games on it. It's got Golden Axe, Streets of Rage, and Revenge of Shinobi, which are all classic titles, and you can pick that up for less than a tenner. So it's one of those games that's nice and fun to play, and you can pick up for next to naught.
Yeah, there's a collection on Xbox Live that's Streets of Rage 1, 2, and 3 that they gave away for free a few months ago. I don't think it's that expensive.
Oh, yeah, I bought it on Steam, and I think it was 99 cents or something, so I think it's pretty cheap to pick up.
They also, I'm assuming on PlayStation as well, it's like the Genesis Classic something-something collection. It's like 50 classic Genesis games, and includes like all the Final Fight games and games. Revenge of Shinobi and all that. The big ones.
All the Final Fight games? Do you mean Streets of Rage?
Streets of Rage.
Final Fight was on the Mega Drive.
Oh, yeah, all the Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
Is on pretty much every single compilation that's been released for the Mega Drive, because it is, outside of Sonic, I would say that Streets of Rage is probably the most iconic game for Mega Drive, and one that people think of straight away when you say Mega Drive.
Yeah, maybe not the most iconic game, probably the most iconic series, because I think because people go for the second one, but honestly, I find that with Streets of Rage 1, even though it's not as good as Streets of Rage 2, I think it's still enjoyable enough in its own right that it's still kind of worth playing from time to time, even if normally you would go for 2 or maybe 3.
And there's also a fourth one that has just been announced last week.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's done by the same people that did the Wonder Boy remake, so the graphics look fantastic. I really like the art style, and if it plays as well as Wonder Boy, then it should be really good.
For some reason, they've only decided to have Axel and Blaze as the playable characters.
I don't know, maybe they're all, because it's only the reveal trailer that we've seen so far, which shows very little. So maybe it's just centered around Axel and Blaze, because they're the two characters that are in all three of the games, and maybe they'll be unlockable characters like they were in other games. Like, I mean, in the third one, you can unlock a few characters throughout the story. So maybe they're going to go that route, where you start off with the main two and then get more.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll see. It's still early days, but I'm quite excited. I just hope that they kind of add a lot more, because the brief bit of gameplay kind of looked like every first level from a Streets of Rage game, and it included, like, enemies that we've seen before. I'm sure there will be new stuff. I'm sure it's just, like, old characters just to, you know, get people excited and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was intentional as well.
Yeah. I'm sure it is. I don't think they're just going to rehash, like, old environments and old enemies just completely, because that would be an anticlimax, but I've got high hopes for it. To be honest, the main thing for me is that Sega's, you know, releasing something from an old franchise that isn't Sonic. If this goes well and people buy Streets of Rage 4, which I'm sure they will because, like, the internet's talking about it at the moment, yeah, hopefully they'll revive other classics too, like the Shinobi games and, you know, even things like Burning Rangers and Knights and, you know, like all the other franchises they have.
They have tried rebooting Shinobi quite a few times. I have a 3DS game. Yeah.
Yeah, they did do that, and I don't think it sold very well. Although I played it and it was okay. It wasn't like the best game I've ever played, but it was solid enough. And I believe the PS2 games are quite good, but I've never played them.
No, neither have I.
But anyway, we're going off topic. Streets of Rage. All in all, I think it's a good game. Do you all agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
I'll probably add it to my library.
Fair enough. Well, as I say, like with your new Mega Drive, Ryan, I would get the Mega Games 2 instead, just because you've got three great games.
Right.
But do what you want. It's your Mega Drive. Or Genesis, or whatever the fuck you call it.
We just called it a Sega.
Or Sega, if you're Australian.
Or if it was my parents, it was a Nintendo. They were all Nintendo.
Everything's a Nintendo, yeah. All right, cool. So what have you got next in store for us, Matt?
We'll take a quick musical break, and then we'll jump into that. Second game this episode is Altered Beast, which is another game that I played quite a hell of a lot when I was a kid. I believe I mentioned in the earlier Beat 'em Up episode that I really loved Altered Beast as a kid, but really didn't like Golden Axe. And as an adult, that opinion got flipped around. And I really enjoy Golden Axe and really hate Altered Beast. I put it in this section because it is one of the games that I grew up playing and spent a lot of time on. But I really, really do not like this game. I don't think it's a good game at all. It was a arcade game to start with, and it came to the Mega Drive. It was actually the very first pack-in game for the Mega Drive before they started putting Sonic in. And I just can't help feeling sorry for the people that bought a Mega Drive and then got Altered Beast to play. Because it is to me, such a dire game. What did you guys think of it?
Well, is it strictly a... I was kind of thinking about this. Is it strictly a beat-em-up game? Because, I mean, it's sort of a beat-em-up game, but it scrolls along with you, and it kind of feels a bit like an action platformer, a bit like a beat-em-up.
Truth be told, it's more of a beat you up.
Well, yeah.
I would class it as a beat 'em up, just a shit beat 'em up.
It is very basic.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was a very kind of early title, and it was adapted from the arcade, so I can understand it being very basic. But, you know, first of all, kind of have to get this out of the way, but rise from your grave. That's the best part about the game.
I was actually surprised at the clarity of the audio, you know.
I think one of the things that kind of pulled me in as a kid was like the speech in the game and the boss kind of like taunting you. That and the beast animations were the kind of things that I think kind of like sparked my imagination, and that's why I enjoyed it as a kid.
You know, it is an interesting premise because, as you say, it's a beat-em-up, and then you gradually gain extra power and you get bigger and stronger until finally you turn into an animal. Although it's weird because, like, you turn into a wolf, like, I think two or three times, and then there's a
twice.
Bear and then a dragon. Is it the first and last levels that's the wolf?
First and last of the wolves, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you turn into a bunch of different animals just randomly. And there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. It's not like it's thematic for the level. It's just, now I'm going to turn into a dragon for whatever reason.
I do like how, as you gain your little power-ups, at first you're just kind of a dude. but then you're kind of like a strong guy, and then like the
yeah, like you rip out your shirt and everything.
like the blow out your shirt. You're just like well defined abs and massive shoulders, and then you just turn into an animal. It's like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, I think that the premise is generally kind of good. I really think that power-up system is very satisfying. I think every time you collect one of those power-ups and you know, your sprite gets bigger and stronger and you're doing more damage to things, I think that's a very rewarding kind of feeling.
But I do think it would have worked better as a platformer, though.
Yeah, I do agree. I think that the format of the game was probably what lets it down a bit, because I think that it's okay for the first couple of levels, and then after that it just gets so overwhelming that it kind of starts to spoil the game a bit. I mean, that's probably its arcade roots showing more than anything, but adapting it and reimagining it as a platformer probably would have done the game the world of good.
I mean, I didn't hate the game, and I played the mobile version, so that's saying something.
Yeah, I mean, I find it fun to play. I can play it and enjoy it, but if I play it through to the end, I get fed up of it by, you know, the halfway point. But if I was just to play through and play through, like, the first few stages, I'd have a good time.
One other thing that should be mentioned is the god-awful music in the game as well.
I
think it's hit and miss. Like, I think the music for the first stage is all right, and then the other stages are hit and miss.
Now, one thing I took notice of, and I'm not sure which came first, I'm looking that up right now, but I took note in the second stage, there's like the little bird-like little dragon enemies look an awful lot like one of the beast rides in Golden Axe 2.
I believe it's the exact same sprite.
Yeah,
they're in Golden Axe 1 as well.
Oh yeah, they are in Golden Axe 1, aren't they?
And I'm not entirely sure that that's unintentional. I mean, they're both Sega properties, so I imagine it's, you know, maybe like a callback. Presumably Golden Axe took the sprite and just, you know, adapted those creatures into Golden Axe mythology. I don't know.
Maybe the games are linked.
Maybe. They exist in the same universe.
Apparently, it's a cockatrice. The official the official name for the creature is a chicken leg.
What?
That is the official name for in the game. It's called
what,
chicken
in Altered Beast?
And Golden Axe.
Really? I thought cockatrice was the Golden Axe one, and then maybe Altered Beast had a different name.
I think it's just everybody calls it a cockatrice because that's what it's supposed to be, but when it translates about to the Japanese, it's apparently chicken leg. So,
interesting.
That's a thing. Huh. But yeah, it did appear in Altered Beast first, and then it became a rideable creature in Golden Axe. So, there you go.
Level 2's got those weird slime balls as well. There doesn't seem to be any consistency with the enemy design at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I was saying with the transformations, they just seem to be whatever. And it's the same with the bosses as well. I mean, for me, I think that the levels are just kind of there. I like the power-up system, but the levels are kind of just meh. But the big highlight is the bosses. Like, the bosses actually have a bit of imagination, and they actually have proper patterns to fight. But they're just kind of random things. Like, he turns into a big slime creature at one point, and then the final boss is like a rhino. And it just makes no sense. You'd have thought his final form would be his true form, maybe. But it's just stuff. But yeah, so how far did everyone get?
3 minutes.
I got to stage 3, kept dying to the boss, and I just thought, fuck it.
Which one is the stage 3 boss?
It's the
where you're a dragon?
No, that's the fourth one. The third level boss is this weird snail looking thing with a dragon's head.
Yeah, it's what I was thinking of then. I thought you fight as a dragon, but I'm wrong. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. That boss is Interesting. Ryan, where did you get to?
I got to the level 2 boss and got my ass handed to me, and I thought, you know what, I can do this. And I got about halfway through stage 2, and then I went, nah, maybe I can't do this.
Yeah, it's not the easiest of games.
Especially on a phone.
Yeah. Steve, how far did you get? Just on the first level, was it?
Yeah, first boss.
All right.
It was a weird one, too.
Yeah.
One of the strangest bosses is the... It's kind of like a pot-bellied dragon that shoots fire out of its belly. It's a really weird kind
design.
Of concept for a boss. It's just floating in midair.
Yeah, I think I'll say that's the issue with all the pieces. Like, the design is just stuff. There's no kind of consistency or anything. It's just there are things. Beat them up.
The only boss that I found visually interesting, personally, was the big plant with all the eyes.
Yeah, that one was cool. To be honest, I liked all the bosses. I enjoyed fighting all the bosses to varying degrees. You know, that snail thing is probably the worst one of the lot. But, yeah, for me, I think the thing that spoils it are the levels. Because, like, after, like, level 3 or so, they just start getting quite annoying more than anything. Like, the last level is just mayhem.
In terms of, like, visuals for the level as well, the background of the levels just seems so uninspired and dull. Graphically, it's not a great game anyway, but it just looks terrible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the graphics aren't going to be great because it's like, I think it was a launch title.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, still the aesthetic design is a bit questionable. To be honest, I kind of think the thing with Altered Beast is, you know, like we were looking at with Streets of Rage 4, I think that the Altered Beast series would kind of do from a proper remake. I mean, not like the one that I think Sega tried to remake it a while ago.
Yeah,
I think if they gave it to a different developer, you know, like they did with Sonic Mania, for example, and someone with fresh ideas, I think you could potentially do something with a franchise. I think it has like a core principle that's decent, but the initial game, Altered Beast, is
Yeah,
it sure is a game.
I think that idea does have some merit. I think there is something to the power-up mechanic that could be utilized in a different game. It just, they, like you said, they would have to basically start from the ground up.
Yeah, definitely. And like Matt says, maybe make it a platformer or something.
I mean, I feel at that point we would just have a platformer version of Bloody Roar, but, you know, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
That's true.
A version was released for the PlayStation 2, and it is kind of, like, widely derided.
Yeah, which is quite surprising, considering, you know, the first isn't a masterpiece. But for me, I didn't hate it. I think it's enjoyable enough in short bursts, but it's never a game that I'm going to jump into and think, oh, I'll play this for a laugh.
Yeah, I feel like a proper save system on this, which I know the, I think Altered Beast is in that massive Genesis collection, and it has like save states. And I feel like if you could just go, I'm going to save my game and I'm going to come back to this in a couple days, you could actually, you know, muscle through the game and enjoy yourself versus getting frustrated by World 2 or 3.
I'm not sure you'd exactly be enjoying yourself that much, really, over certain other games that you could play.
Right.
I already gave my opinion on it. It's not great, but it's not bad.
I'd give it a solid 5 out of Beast.
I'd give it 6 out of Altered.
I'd kick it in the dick and push it downstairs.
Likewise.
Nice.
That's the spirit we're looking for.
Right, okay, well, let's get that one out of the way and move on to something hopefully a little bit better. But I think I know what's coming up next, so maybe not.
My next pick is Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I had Sonic 1 and 2 on my Mega Drive, and I always found Sonic 1 playable, but really quite difficult to get through. And I found Sonic 2 a little bit easier going, kind of more visually appealing. I found the music was a bit better as well. So this was the one I actually played most on my Mega Drive in terms of Sonic games. You can play two-player with one player as Sonic, one player as Tails. And it doesn't really work, the two-player, but it is there if you want to kind of like do co-op in that. There's also a versus mode which has split screen. It's a bit more fun than the co-op mode, but it does slow down the game quite a lot. But it is a Sonic game. It is one of the most popular Sonic games. And what did you guys think of it?
Sonic 2 was actually the first Sonic game I ever played. I actually didn't play the first one until a few years after this. So, I mean, it's kind of got that bit of nostalgia for me, but, you know, I recognize that some of the ones that came later were a lot better.
I played this when I was a kid with my friend, my one friend who had a Sega Genesis. I do recall us always getting frustrated in the chemical plant because that is not fun in co-op at all. It's a terrible, terrible stage in co-op. But we spent a lot of time playing the kind of the verses. And if I remember correctly, Tails is slightly slower than Sonic.
But it can fly, yeah.
Yeah, but like even in the verses, you notice that Tails isn't as fast. And I think in the casino stage, in the versus mode, there's a certain jump that Tails can't make because he's just not fast enough.
Well, he can fly over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I played Sonic 2 as a child as well. It's one of the games I owned. In fact, my very first experience of Sonic was from a VHS tape. I remember having like a Mega Drive VHS tape which showed off like a bunch of games on the system. And the first time I ever saw Sonic was some video footage of the Hilltop Zone. So that was my very first experience of Sonic. And I thought, that actually looks really fun and really beautiful. And then I ended up getting, I'm not sure, I think I got Sonic 1 on the Mega Drive, and I got the Game Gear games at some point as well. Can't remember what order I got them in, but yeah, either way, I had quite early experiences with Sonic 2. But the good thing is with Sonic 2 as well, which, you know, Matt touched upon briefly, is, you know, you've got different options to play. You can play, you know, as Sonic or Tails if you want to do the co-op. But also it has compatibility with Sonic and Knuckles. So you can actually play through the entire game as Knuckles, which is what I did for the playthrough, which is an interesting experience.
I've never actually tried doing that.
It was actually my first time doing it.
I do have Sonic and Knuckles, so I should definitely try that at some point.
I wouldn't rush to do it.
Oh.
The game's clearly not designed for Knuckles, so it's one of those oddities more than anything.
Sonic 3 was designed for Knuckles.
Well, yeah. But Sonic 2 clearly wasn't. Even just things like bugging and glitching and stuff. But, you know, in fair play to it, you know, it wasn't ever designed for that. So it was just like an extra bonus thrown in.
It honestly seems like it was more of a... the Sonic and Knuckles cart almost seems like it was more of a ROM hack for Sonic 2.
Well, yeah, true. So what does everyone think of Sonic 2 then? We all kind of have nostalgia for it, but as a game, do you like it?
Playing through it again recently, I found it really enjoyable up until about the Casino Night Zone. I think the Casino Night Zone is...
Oh, come on.
...is the best stage in the game,
okay.
And it kind of goes downhill from there. I mean, the last couple stages are just awful. The Sky Fortress stage, I believe it's called, is just...
Wing Fortress.
Wing Fortress. It is just...
Bullshit.
Yeah, it's an absolute mess. And the one before that, the oil...
Oil
Ocean. Yeah, that is just terrible as well.
Oh, actually, the one before that is Metropolis. And then Oil Ocean is before that one.
I hate Metropolis because there's a lot of enemies that kind of reside in the walls. Like, there's the little star things that shoot their spikes.
Oh,
and they're,
God, those are
they
horrible.
Blend in with the walls.
And they appear in positions that they can hit you. Like, you'll jump up a thing and there's a big crab that punches you in the face.
Yeah.
Or the things that look like Scyther from Pokemon, where they throw a thing at you and it curves in such a way that it's bound to hit you.
I'd rather enjoy Oil Ocean, especially after, you know, you muscle through Metropolis. I don't know, I just like it. It's an interesting stage. The music is nice. And visually, it's neat as well. Plus, there's, like, the oil slides.
Well, for me, I kind of think Sonic 2 did a lot for the series. I'm not going to deny that. You know, with the introduction of Tails, and then the spin dash, and the overhaul of the aesthetics, I think, you know, that is definitely a good thing for the series, and it really kind of set the, you know, set the template going forward. However, you know, replaying it, I find I like the game less and less each time. As Matt said, you know, the Casino Night Zone is sort of the turnaround point, but even then I'd kind of argue that, I mean, Casino Nights, okay, but then you've got the Aquatic Ruin Ocean, or I think it's just Aquatic Ruin, which I don't like at all. I find that level really annoying.
Well, no, because you can stay above water until you miss a jump, and then it's an underwater level, and it's a bad one.
But it's still not a fun level, even if you're above the water, because you've got, like, these areas, and you've got those enemies bursting out of walls and hitting you. Then you've got the mosquitoes. You've got lots of obnoxious, you know, spike things firing at you from the walls. And I don't find it an enjoyable level. And as you say, it's quite difficult to stay above the water. And when you go below it, it becomes like 10 times worse.
Now, I will say that the Robotnik fight for that stage is my favorite one.
I'm not sure it's my favorite one, but it is pretty cool.
Other than that, the stage can eat a dick.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think Emerald Hill's fine. I mean, really, Emerald Hill is just a shiny version of Green Hill. Chemical Plant, I think, is the best stage in the game. And then after that, things get a bit wonky. You've got Casino Night, which is decent, and the rest, you know, range from okay to terrible. I like the aesthetic and Mystic Cave in the mines, but there's a lot of really annoying stuff in there.
There's a lot of traps.
And then Oil Ocean and Metropolis, terrible.
One thing that is consistent, though, is the music throughout the game is almost universally excellent. The only track that I didn't like was the Hilltop one, but apart from that, I thought the music was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was all pretty good.
I'll agree with that. I mean, I like the Hilltop music, but, you know, I will admit that, you know, all the music is pretty good, even on the levels I dislike.
Yeah, the final level music is actually kind of creepy and unsettling.
Well, for the Death Egg?
Yes.
The Death Egg level is kind of interesting as well. I was lucky enough to play on the Sega Saturn, which has difficulty modes, and playing on the normal difficulty is actually a little bit fairer, so it gets rid of some of the obnoxious stuff. I mean, most of the level design is the same, but you've probably encountered the inescapable pit in Mystic Cave in Act 2, where you fall down and it's impossible to get back up.
Yep.
Yeah, so even if you're supersonic, it's just too deep. It gets rid of that, and basically it adds like a barrier there so you can actually jump back up. And then on Death Egg, it gives you like a few rings, because that final boss is stupid.
It's kind of like they wanted to put so many things that could kill you in that. It's kind of like you've got platforms, great, but the platforms have got spikes on the bottom. And those spike platforms will float around into other spikes, and also there's a laser.
I'm talking about the final boss, the Death Egg, where it's you fight against Metal Sonic and the Egg Robot.
I may be remembering it wrong. I only played.
He's got like
a
spiked glove, and he's stomping around. He's jumping up. He's firing his glove.
Oh yeah, the one I'm thinking of is the boss before that, and then you do.
Oh yeah, the one before that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and then you do the Metal Sonic. And then the last one is Robotnik in his big mech suit, isn't it?
Yeah, but you have to do Metal Sonic and the Mecha Robotnik back-to-back.
Yeah.
I mean, Metal Sonic's quite an easy boss, but the Mecha Robotnik, the Egg Robot, is just something else. His weak spot is so tiny, and there's so many, like, instant death parts to his body.
Yeah, because he shoots his fist at you, and he just seems to just hit you wherever you are.
Yeah. It's not one of the best bosses in the game, and I kind of think it's like a bit of a ridiculous difficulty spike that comes out of nowhere. Because even though, like, you know, Oil Ocean and Metropolis are, you know, difficult levels, it still feels like that boss is just way harder than, like, any of the bosses before.
Yeah. If it wasn't for save states, I never would have got through that.
Yeah.
Just save scummed it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I kind of feel like that defeats the purpose. I mean, if you need to save scum it, then it kind of points out that there's something wrong with the game. I mean, like, I'll say, I mean, people really, really like Sonic 2, but I'll say, like, I like maybe 2-3 levels in it, and the rest of them I don't care for. The music is good, but I really dislike Sonic 2. Not a terrible game, but it annoys me when I play it.
I think, truth be told, Sonic 2's biggest problem is that Sonic 3 exists.
Yeah. And that's it. I was going to say something, but honestly, you sort of nailed it. Because everything that Sonic 2 did, Sonic 3 took it and did it better.
Yeah.
It did the stage design better. It did the music better. Maybe not as iconic because it's not Sonic and Tails, but it just did it better.
I've never actually played Sonic 3.
Oh, well, you're missing out.
Well, you're going to at some point. Have you played
Sonic Mania? Yes, I have.
It's basically like that, but back in the 90s.
I mean, it's one that I don't actually own on cartridge, but I've got it on compilations.
Well, yeah. It's in our list, so you'll play it at some point.
Cool.
So did you... Oh, yeah. The other thing that I haven't mentioned as well are the special stages. Now, that's something that I think is quite cool in concept, but is actually more annoying than not. Because you play the first two or three and you think, yeah, this is fun. You've got to collect these rings and avoid, like, spiked bombs in this half pipe. And it's, you know, it's neat. And then it gets really, really hard. Like, unless you've memorized it completely, you haven't got a chance. If you're going on reaction alone, you've got no chance in doing it.
I couldn't get past the third one. The first two I managed to do, but the third one, just nah, couldn't do it.
The best I ever did in the bonus stage was actually in co-op. It's the one time when co-op actually makes it easier.
Well, yeah, because in single player, if you've got Tails along with you, then you've kind of got to, you know, time it just right, because there's a bit of a delay with Tails following you, and he also holds rings,
so
you can lose things because of the AI being shit.
And then also because... you can get more rings when you're playing two-player, and you can finish up those stages faster, because there's a couple times where there's like, oh, there's rings on either side, but you have to pick a, you know, you have to pick a path. And when co-op, you can just split, and you pick up the rings.
Yeah.
All of them. So it's better. It's one of the times that game is genuinely better with co-op.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it's a neat idea, but I think that they just made it a little bit too difficult, which... You know, I know the special stages from Sonic 1 are quite boring, but at least you can potentially do them based on your own skill. With Sonic 2, I think it's just pure memorization. And for me, that spoils it a lot. Because, like, you know, with the other Sonic games, you can rely on skill, more or less.
I really think the special stages for Sonic 2 was them just trying to show off the power of the Genesis and its blast processing.
Genesis does what Nintendo don't.
That's true.
Yeah. Fail as a company. Zing!
You know, on the flip side, though, I suppose with the special stages, is that if you actually get all the emeralds, you become so overpowered that you don't even have to try on any of the stages. So, you know, I kind of see the flip side as well. But, yeah, usually I just avoid doing the special stages at all because I don't think it's worth it, even if I can save scum.
I give Sonic a go out of fast, so...
I would just rather play literally any other Sonic game to Sonic 2. I mean, even Sonic 06 and Sonic Boom, I would probably opt over Sonic 2.
Since my new Genesis I just got came with a Sonic and Knuckles cartridge, I will be acquiring Sonic 2 and 3 just because I feel I'm obligated to now.
Yeah. One thing that I'd say about Sonic 3 is play through it first without Sonic and Knuckles, because like the final boss in Sonic 3 isn't in Sonic 3 and Knuckles. So you're actually missing out on a bit of content if you don't do that. Right. And it's the best boss in the game, which is a bit annoying, but hey-ho.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Right, so did you all like it? I didn't, but what about you guys?
I definitely enjoyed it. I believe, looking back on it now, maybe Sonic 1 is the better game out of the two. But it's certainly really enjoyable, at least up to about halfway through.
Yeah. I think Sonic 2 managed to ride the hype train for what now? Going on 30 years? Or
yeah.
No, not 30. It's
however long it's been.
It came out in 92. Years.
92. So 26 years. It's rode the hype train. If you say Genesis or Mega Drive, the first thing people think of is Sonic 2.
Yeah.
And it honestly, while I don't think it's a bad game, I really don't think it deserves the pedestal it's put on.
Yeah, I mean, people say it's like the best Mega Drive game, and I don't even think it's close.
Vector Man is a much better game.
Yeah. One thing finally to mention is, as I say, I was playing it on the Sega Saturn, which actually includes difficulty modes, and it's quite an interesting thing, so I'll touch upon it. But the difficulty modes, normal mode makes a few slight tweaks to make it a little fairer in places. But then easy mode is for like a quick playthrough. So you actually play one act from each zone, and the bosses only take 3 hits to kill, which makes the game like substantially quicker and substantially easier. You know, it's a bit too easy, some might say, but it's one of those things where if you want to experience the game and you're finding the game a bit too difficult, that's always another option.
That's kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, it does that with all the Sonic games. And then you've got the compatibility with Sonic and Knuckles as well. You have time trials. It's got quite a few different tweaks. If anyone has a Sega Saturn and, you know, you're interested in the Sonic titles, I'd recommend picking it up, even if you're on the Mega Drive versions.
Does it cut out that one bit in Chemical Plant 2? You know which bit I mean. That horrible bit.
Yes, on normal mode it adds in a couple of solid blocks for you to jump on in between. The bit with the rising water. Yeah, it adds a couple of blocks in between the moving platforms just to make it a little bit easier to get up. Although, to be honest, because I'm so used to the normal way, I actually find that more difficult because I try and jump the normal way and jump into a block and fall. So I imagine most people would find it easier, but for me, it just gets in the way. But yeah, it does tweak a few things like that that are just annoying.
Neat.
Yeah.
Okay, so Adam did mention just a little while ago that Sonic 2 isn't exactly the best Genesis game. Let me tell you what is. My final pick for this episode and my personal favourite Mega Drive game is Wiz and Liz, the Frantic Wabbit Wescue, which I am not saying out loud ever again. It was released by Psygnosis in 1993. It's kind of a platformer, but it's also kind of not. It's something of a collectathon. Basically, all of the rabbits have been kidnapped.
Rabbits.
I'm not saying rabbits. All of the rabbits have been kidnapped, and you play as either Wiz or Liz, who are wizards, sorcerers, whatever you, and you have to go around and save them all, basically. You have a hub world where you can mix various fruits into kind of spells, and they all do different things, and then you've got another world where you can just go around collecting rabbits. It's a difficult game to describe because there are so many simple mechanics, but there are so many different kind of simple mechanics that that all kind of like work together. And the game has a lot of variety in that way, but trying to describe it and trying to get like an overall description of the game across is really quite difficult.
Yeah, I'd say that the core gameplay mechanic is sort of like an arcadey thing, like, you know, your traditional... Is it Mario Brothers, the original one, where you're just like in that area and you're bumping off the enemies?
Yes.
I mean, it sort of reminds me of that in a way. You've got like a looping kind of area where you've got to do your objective and you've got to collect the letters, basically, as you, you know, save these rabbits. So that core mechanic is like an arcade-y style thing. But as you say, there's like a lot more to it, so that doesn't really do the game justice.
Yeah, basically you have a timer that counts down, and as you rescue the rabbits, there's like a word at the top of the screen that you have to fill in, and the rabbits will drop letters. So you collect the rabbits, collect the letters, and once the letters have been all collected, the rabbits then start dropping fruit and extra time. And if you get a certain amount of the fruit, then that will add it to your hub world and you can make spells with it. Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a really weird game, but it is one that I have a lot of fun with.
It's very, very odd. Also, I was taken aback about how fast you move. Like you haul ass.
Yeah, and they're not exactly like young of these wizards, and you've seen them doing like somersaults and sprinting.
Yeah.
Honestly, this game reminded me of what it's like to control Sonic more than Sonic 2 did.
No, but for real, though, that's what I when I played it, I'm like, wow, this is another Sonic game.
But it works well because it never feels like you're thinking, right, okay, there's another rabbit this way, I've got to walk all the way back here. Because you move so fast that you just kind of clear the, you know, clear the level in like seconds.
I did rather enjoy the music in this game.
The music throughout is like really,
really enjoyable,
jolly, and it's fun.
It's clean. It's like because visually the game is nice too. And usually on a lot of just games in general, you'll see where they'll dump individually. You know, they'll dump their power into the visuals, or they'll put in nice clean audio. And this kind of sported both.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it's very much a Psygnosis game because, I mean, Psygnosis did Lemmings, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and the art style very much reminded me of Lemmings.
It's incredibly colourful. There's really nice sprite work.
Yeah, really soft-looking letters as well in that kind of... I don't think it's Comic Sans, but it's that kind of font where it looks, you know, round and happy.
All of the fruit as well looks really happy because they've all got faces. And all the fruit just looks like they're loving it.
You keep saying bright and happy, but I would just like to point out that the first boss, which is some flower, the mad flower or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is horrifying.
All of the bosses are horrifying in a cartoony way, but in a really unsettling way.
It's
sort of like Cuphead in that regard, where the bosses are kind of very happy looking, but also kind of weird.
Also kind of in a contra-y way. Like you shoot the eyes out of this. Well, you end up just shooting the whole face off the flower.
Yeah.
And it's really disturbing. Also, the rabbits will explode eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
And that's also a little horrifying.
I don't think they explode on the lowest difficulty, but I think on second difficulty upwards, they can explode.
If you wait too long, they'll start flashing and they'll blow up, and it's just like, Jesus.
But it's kind of weird, really, because you've got the main gameplay, which is like collecting all these letters and stuff, and then suddenly you're thrust into like this boss fight, and you're just spraying all this magic at them, and as they're ripping out the eyes from its sockets, and, you know... tearing these bosses a new one.
And then you'll get the odd mini games. Where the mini game I found was you have to throw tomatoes at people who are in
stocks.
There you go. And it's like, what the hell is wrong with this game?
It's just a lot of different things kind of like thrown into a pot, and through the unification of a visual style and the music, it kind of brings it all together, and it just works.
Really, Matt, were these thrown into a pot and mixed together like some sort of witch's brew?
In terms of the way that you mix the spells, generally in the lowest difficulty level, you don't really need to worry about it too much. But from the second difficulty level upwards, you kind of need to strategize quite a bit. You kind of need to know what all the fruits do and kind of like buy and sell certain fruits, because you have a shop that you can open as well. Buy and sell certain fruits to give you certain effects and give you more time on the timer, or open up bonus levels that will give you extra stuff as well. There is kind of like a whole strategy element to it that if you've only played the lowest difficulty, it really doesn't play into it that much. But by the time you get to the hardest difficulty, you absolutely need to know what every fruit combination does, and you need to use them well to get through the game.
I think this is the kind of game that, you know, would benefit from having when you're a child. One of those games that you replay again and again, and then you're just discovering more and more stuff. As you say, with like the fruit combinations, and, you know, as you play the higher difficulties, you get access to more bosses and more, you know, more things. And it's just something that you gradually unravel the layers of, which I think you'd appreciate more as a child and discovering those things, rather than now where it's just like, okay, I've beaten this game. And then it's like Ryan saying about throwing tomatoes at guys in stocks. I'm like, oh, I didn't get this. What the hell?
Yeah, my original copy of the game still has my little handwritten notes of all the different spell combinations.
That's actually kind of great.
I think that time investment really would do this game like a lot of justice.
Yeah, like I said, you do need to know the combinations if you're going to get far in the later difficulties.
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a player's guide game.
Well, I'm not even sure, because how would you do a guide? It's just like run around, collect the rabbits. You'd only really be able to get like tips, maybe?
For the spells.
I suppose. Yeah. Just,
considering how many fruit and vegetables there has to be
a
solid two dozen combinations.
Oh, way more than that.
Yeah. So what do you think, Steve?
I actually quite liked the game. At first, I was really confused. I didn't know really what was going on. But as I worked my way through the levels, I kind of got a feel for it and ended up enjoying myself quite a bit.
Yeah, that was basically my experience, too, was I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had no idea what my goal was. I mean, it sort of hands you what you need to do, and I guess that's the point of the apprentice level that they throw you into, is it just kind of like, here, we're going to throw you out into the world, you know, spread your wings and see what you can do, and then you go like, oh, there's a ton of stuff I can do, and now I'm throwing tomatoes at people in stocks.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get over this. That was so unexpected.
It's one of those games that's simple on the surface but has a surprising amount of depth.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely an accurate description.
But it is one that you can just jump in and do a few levels and dip out and have fun doing it. Because there is just this joyous kind of like feel to it. I mean, even the box art, if you're listening at home, Google the box art. The box art is just wonderful. It's got these elderly wizard, I think they're brother and sister actually, and the wizard is just got like an armful of rabbits and he's running around. The witch is kind of like looking up at the moon with a worried look on her face. And it's just really, really nice box art.
It's whimsical.
Yeah.
And then you throw tomatoes at people in stocks and rip a flower's eyes out and you're like, oh my God. But hey, it was the 90s.
Did the game ever get like a re-release or anything on like any virtual consoles or anything? Or is it literally just Mega Drive?
It is Mega Drive and Amiga, and it never got released anywhere else.
I thought I saw that it got a DOS release as well.
Not according to the Wikipedia page. It just says Amiga and Mega Drive.
But it's not particularly expensive to get a hold of if people are interested in picking it up.
About £16 box on eBay if you're in the UK.
That's not terrible, and that's about 20
bucks, maybe. Yeah, that's not too bad. I kind of say it's probably worthwhile, especially if you're going to, you know, put the time investment into it to discover everything it has to offer.
I'm going to get it. This is definitely going to be added to my library once I start building it.
Good idea.
Yeah, I think this would definitely be worth picking up.
I don't know if I'd spend a whole lot more than $25 on it, but...
Yeah, I think the current price is probably just about right, but if it climbed higher, it'd be probably a bit tougher to recommend.
But like I said, it is probably my favorite game on the system, which is why I left it till last. And I just get so much fun out of playing this game.
Yeah, and that's fair enough.
I had a blast.
Cool. So we'll take a final break then, and we'll have a look at the challenges that we did and discuss which one was our favorite.
For all of the games in this episode, I set challenges to see if people could complete them for each game. For Streets of Rage, the challenge was to find the infinite loop, which is a challenge that Adam suggested. And we didn't get quite far enough into Streets of Rage to actually discover that. I mean, Adam knows where it is. I don't.
You know the solution anyway, don't you?
Yes.
What about you two, Ryan, Steve? Are you aware of how to continue a loop in the game past the finale?
I didn't get nearly far enough. I don't even know how.
All right, well, do you want to explain, Matt, or shall I?
You explain it, because I still don't know the exact specifics of it.
Yeah. Well, basically, you get to the final boss after, you know, taking down loads of his minions and refighting all the bosses. And the boss basically says, do you want to join my gang or do you want to fight me? And if you say you want to join his gang, he inexplicably opens a trapdoor and sends you back to the factory level, which I think is like level 5. And you have to replay like half the game again.
That's actually kind of clever.
It is, but it drops you back to like the most annoying level in the game. It's got all these like conveyor belts and these machinery slamming down.
Well, that's what you get, you hooligan.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, no. Don't go for the bad answer. Give a proper answer next time. But it's a neat little thing, and it's cool that they have it. And the games kind of continue that, where you have an option to basically be the bad guy. But Streets of Rage kind of started it with that option, I guess.
The good ending and the bad ending?
Yeah, sort of. Just multiple endings, I guess.
Okay, so on to Altered Beast. The challenge for Altered Beast was to play it without throwing the cartridge out of the window, which I managed to do because I played it on the PS3 on a compilation. So I couldn't throw the cartridge through the window because I didn't play on cartridge.
Mine was on my phone and I wasn't going to throw my phone.
Yeah, mine was emulated, so, you know, I wasn't going to throw my PC.
Yeah, I was playing on the PSP collection, so I actually could have thrown the whole system, but I did not.
Okay, so we all succeeded then. Just.
Just.
A winner is you.
For Sonic 2, the challenge was to complete the first level in 25 seconds, which is something that I wasn't able to do. I managed about 45 seconds as my best time. Did you guys manage to do it?
No, I think I did about a minute.
I don't even know what my time was. I know it wasn't anywhere near 30 seconds.
Well, I think I was probably the only one that managed it. I got like 20 seconds. There's sort of a trick to it. Once you get the speed boots, you can bounce off the tops of enemies and just kind of avoid all the platforming if you're kind of moving at the right speed. So you've just got to, I suppose, just go fast.
I watched your YouTube clip, and yeah, that's honestly really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not actually that hard to do. It's just kind of knowing, you know, where to do it. So once you get that rolling with the speed boots and you can start hitting the tops of the enemies, you kind of just keep holding right and you just keep on bouncing until you reach the finish.
You can slam through Donkey Kong Country levels like that too.
Yeah.
Okay, so just Adam on that one then. The challenge that I set for Wiz and Liz was a little bit harder, and that was to get 50,000 points on the bonus level. Now, to get to the bonus level, you need special letters that occasionally drop from some of the rabbits, which spell the word bonus. And then once you're in the bonus level, saving every rabbit will reward you with 50,000 points. So did any of you manage to do that one?
Okay, no. I did get a bonus level. I didn't realize I got a bonus level, but I didn't save every rabbit.
Ah.
I didn't even unlock the bonus level.
Yeah, same. I didn't even get one.
I managed to get like a couple of the letters, but I got it by mixing fruit. And I didn't actually find any inside any rabbits.
Ah.
And because you can't re-enter the levels, I kind of found that I was limited to, you know, unlocking the letters. I could have replayed the game to try and see if I could do a little bit better next time, but I couldn't be bothered, to be honest. So I never even got to the bonus level.
I've done it before, but I wasn't able to do it on this particular playthrough, just because I didn't find all the letters to enter the bonus level.
Yeah, I think that's probably the hardest part. Well, for me.
Yeah, but I mean, still, even without doing the challenges, I think we all had fun with the games for the most part, apart from Altered Beast, which is shit.
I'm trying to.
So what was everyone's favourite game? Adam?
Well, for me, as I say, I didn't really care for Sonic 2 and Altered Beast, even though I think it's okay, isn't the best. So it's kind of out of Wiz and Liz and Streets of Rage. And I'm going to have to give it to Streets of Rage, to be honest. But I do know that most of that is probably down to nostalgia. I think Wiz and Liz probably has the most going for it in terms of, you know, with all the different kind of content and all the, you know, all the, you know, kind of things that it does that are different and things that it throws out of left field. But I think Streets of Rage is just a solid beam-up title, and I always have fun playing it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Ryan?
Well, I was Wiz and Liz, no contest. Sonic 2 holds a lot of nostalgia for me, but at the end of the day, it is just nostalgia. And with Streets of Rage, as fun as it is, I played Final Fight first, and that's just kind of, now I have an opinion, and I felt that Final Fight was a better series. And Wiz and Liz was so odd and fresh that I immediately, like, as soon as I realized what I was doing, I basically just fell in love with it.
Yeah, cool. A man after my own heart. Steven?
Yeah, I'm going to say Wiz and Liz, too. I am not a huge fan of beat-em-ups. I've never been very fond of them. And like I said, Sonic 2 mainly suffers by, you know, the existence of its sequel. So yeah, I think Wiz and Liz is definitely the clear winner for me.
Okay, awesome. I honestly thought that you all would pick Streets of Rage, but I'm pleasantly surprised that three of us enjoy Wiz and Liz the most out of this lot. So
yeah, I mean, it's a testament to how good the game is, I guess. Because, like, as I say, it was pretty close call for me, too.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, no one really knows about the game is just a crime.
Well, it's good because it keeps the price down.
Aye.
So we don't raise the price.
Well, yeah, buy it quickly while you can.
Okay, so that was everyone's favourite game. I will now pass back over to Adam to lead us out.
All right, well, thank you very much, Matt, and those were some interesting choices for your favourite console. Next time we're going to go into something a little bit more traditional for us, a themed episode. I'm not going to give it away, so you'll have to stay tuned next month to find out what that is. All that's left to do now is say goodbye to everyone. So Ryan, Steve, Matt, bye-bye.
Until next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.